he's right here, so. Oh, we topped it. He cold topped it.
Okay. Ready to go. Yeah.
Eight iron.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he on the sink.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined here by your hosts, Kevin and Mark, as always.
As always.
Season 4, episode 3, are we?
Yeah, 3 in a row as well. We are three back, baby. Row.
We're doing well. Golf's flying. We're getting into late nights. And
This is what it's all about. This is where it gets exciting.
Isn't
it? Yeah. What are we calling it?
Full swing.
Full swing. Let's full start swing. There. How much have you watched?
I've only watched 3 episodes.
I've watched 2.
Have you?
I've been meaning to.
I was going to watch another one, but I don't want to like do them all in. I want to save them. Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of talk about the Ryder Cup one being unbelievable. And I've seen some clips online where Zach Johnson, they record his phone call to Keegan Bradley breaking the news about him not getting his spot. So I'm interested to watch that. But
I think the lads make the show, don't they?
The witch.
Matty and Elliot, who got sprayed in the face by John Rahm and all.
Oh, do
that.
They?
Yeah, they're on it. Yeah.
Do they? Oh, yeah. Brilliant. Quality that.
And then there's a lot of, I think, someone messaged me saying Connor gets a lot of airtime at West Lancs with Alex.
Well, that's good. Yeah. But that was a great journey, that one, because he finished top 10. Was it top? It was like 8, didn't he? Was it just outside top 10?
What, in the actual open?
When he actually got there, yeah.
I'm not too sure. I can't remember.
I think it was top 10.
I was absolutely trolleyed on the Friday, and then I didn't really remember much of the Saturday and Sunday. I was just stunning in bed. So
I went the Saturday and walked around and watched. They were off early, and Alex had like 6 under, was it?
I don't know, honestly.
5? No idea. Sounds. But from the first episode I've watched, I enjoyed watching the Ricky Fowler one. Thought that was really, really good to see, like the way they captured his sort of return to form and the time he was spending with Butch, where he rolled it back to go back to basics with Butch. And, you know, because you don't ever get to see that, do you? You only get to see them on the range, but this is like behind the scenes on a private
range.
He's
changing his like mindset, and he's like
back to basics.
I just have to make him remember who he was, sort of thing.
And then he goes out and obviously nearly wins a major, and then gets the W. Eventually over the line.
Yeah, it was quite emotional, wasn't it, watching it?
Yeah, it was, to be fair, yeah.
There's a good bit of emotion mixed in there. Obviously, you haven't seen the Joel Damon episode, would you?
I've watched the first like 15 minutes of it.
Yeah. He's saying that he's like the most famous, like, worst golfer ever.
Yeah, like, when he put himself down last time, like somebody's got to be the 70th best player in the world.
But, he's even more famous as caddies, like famous signing like people's faces and signing all sorts. And he's getting all this attention and his wife's like, we're famous now, and you've still got to go out, and like, he's like, I'm clean, but I've got this pool, and like, I've still got to clean it, and he's just there, like, he's like, this is my gym workout. And but yeah, he's very like, he has got a very negative mindset, but then it goes to Clark. Then you wouldn't have seen
well, that's
that.
What I was going to say. Yeah, I've seen up to the Clark bit, so maybe I'm more than 15 minutes in, but where it was quite interesting the way he got a mind coach.
Yeah, the sports psychologist, yeah.
And was walking fairways and ends up winning a major. Whereas, and Joel Damon said he's all right, he doesn't need one.
But then, the way he speaks to himself and the way he is on the course, how negative he is, it's like, it's the first thing that the psychologist will say, don't say, because your body listens. Your subconscious listens to everything you say. When you're down talking yourself, you're affecting yourself.
Well, exactly. And you've only got to look at the likes of Max Homer and Joel Damon were probably of a similar ability like 3-4 years ago. Max Homer was on the Corn Ferry, didn't even have a PGA Tour card, and now he's one of the best players in the world. So it doesn't happen to everybody, obviously. There's still talent that sits behind it, but you know, maybe he's not giving himself the best opportunity to succeed without a mental coach. It's probably worth giving it a try. Does he end up giving it a try, does he? Or I haven't seen the full episode.
I can't remember, you know. No. I don't think he does, no.
No.
Because he goes, well, I was talking about that as well, the full team that every golfer's got, they've got a mind coach, they've got a swing coach, and they've got a fitness coach,
yeah,
and probably a nutritionist, whereas he's
got
missed
putting coaches as
putting
well.
Coaches, obviously, yeah, but he's not taking advantage of the two key areas, and he's still 97th in the world. So,
yeah,
like
talk about the 1% gains, don't you? That's like, you know, there's a good chance of a 20% gain there if he gets
like
his
if he's
right.
Using cleaning his pool as his gym workout, and he's calling himself all sorts every time he hits a bad shot. Like, he's probably not going to win, is he?
Exactly.
But at the same time, he's obviously an unbelievable golfer.
And how many episodes is the six?
I think there's six, yeah. There's definitely more than five, because five's the Ryder Cup one.
Yeah, so obviously, what was the opening episode again?
The opening episode was like Rory was on it, and they were gearing up towards the...
It was the live... It was the live stuff, wasn't it?
All the lives, yeah. So I was going to talk about that, right? So remember like last time, and I was saying that it's a big setup and a big conspiracy over it. Same again.
Why?
Just like Netflix just happened to be there when like Murray Coward, like, and Jay Monahan and the Saudi fellow come on the telly, and like they just happened to be in the cafe when Damon gets the news and that. It's just like, come on.
Yeah. It makes for good
telly. It makes for great telly, but it's like obviously, I don't know how much they were following them or like how. But if that news was meant to have just broken and they've just found it out, but then they just like
happened to be everywhere.
Happened to be everywhere at the same time. I don't know. It just seemed a bit like, I don't know. And then Rory being on it, like you can see exactly why Rory's went on it. He's went on it to like sort of show why he U-turned.
Yeah.
To reverse, like not like throw Monahan under the bus as such, but.
Well, he's said it all along, hasn't he? He's like, what was the word he used? Like
sacrificial puppet. Lamb.
Sacrificial lamb, yeah. So, you know, I think he's pumped his heart and soul and just felt like, you know, they've turned his back on him. And ultimately, what was it that he said? It doesn't matter. Like, it was just clear that when it comes to the big decisions being made, Rory's not in the picture, doesn't get a shout, but it's meant to be a player's tour.
Well, that's it. And, like... He comes out and he at the Canadian Open, he's like, I hate Liv. And then like by the US Open, Monahan's done that interview on CNN and all that. And then Rory's come out saying he feels like a sacrificial lamb and all this. And then he goes and you can tell it's like out of sort of spite. Like that he's like, oh, what do you think of the Liv guys and all that? And he's like, well, I'm going to play a practice round with Brooks. And then just like gets off and then goes and plays with him. And it's like, and then that Dan Rappaport comes on and he's like, Rory sent everyone into a frenzy. Like, what is he? What's going on here, sort of thing. And then he comes out saying that I just thought, fuck it. Like, I want that's literally was his quote. Like, fuck it. I want everyone to sort of get along and be better. So you can sort of see how he. When I've always said it's not him speaking.
Yeah, you have always said that.
And you can see it, like, because it's that up and down, and that follows the. What Monahan's doing so much that it's like...
Well, it's who the players look up to as well, because, you know, Monahan will be saying one thing as the commissioner of the tour, and, you know, everything he says he's got to be seen to be doing right by the tour, because he's the main man, he's the top boss there. But ultimately, the players will need a voice that comes from their perspective, because Monahan's not a player.
No.
So if you've got somebody like Rory, who's well-respected, he's the perfect spokesperson.
So yeah, and also he seems to just be saying whatever like they want him to say, sort of thing. So well, it's
coming from the same wavelength, isn't it? You can't have that conflict if you want to drive the message that the PGA Tour is the place to be at. Stick with us, you know. Liv's not going to last too long, which was the message at the very beginning. Then ultimately, if Monahan's saying that, and then Rory's reiterating that point, the players are likely to get behind that message.
Yeah, but then if he's taking that message, and as soon as Monahan goes on the telly, Rory changes his message, we jumped all over it. The golf world's all over it. Like, he just makes his word becomes nothing.
Yeah.
Because he's just following, he's just, like, saying whatever he's meant to say.
Well, that's why he just said sacrificial lamb.
Exactly, yeah. So it doesn't feel, it just doesn't, it loses its credibility, doesn't it, a little bit?
I think in Rory's defence, though, he's there's not a lot more he can do. You know what I mean? If he felt passionately about being part of Liv, and if his truth was Liv's all right and I want to get behind Liv, then he can't come out and say that, can he, surely?
Well, no, but then he did change it, and then he did say there was a few percent chance that he like could have went there. So he went from hating it to maybe going to like wanting golf to all be together to... Like they
it's
should be. Then he
it's
said
unprecedented
that,
times.
No,
it
is. But then he's saying that they should be allowed back and all that. It's just a bit all over the place.
Yeah, it was a lot of politics to begin with, wasn't it? You know, I think it was us versus them, and it still is like that to a certain extent. I know they've got the agreement, but then there's still comments that come out like we shouldn't allow them back on the tour. Certain players have said, other players have said I'd never go there, and things like that. So who knows what we're gonna see, what this is going to look like. It news that did break out was around the new PGA Tour Enterprise and the boards that got announced. So Jay Monahan, he was named Chief Executive Officer of the group with five further players: Patrick Cantlay, Peter Malnati, Adam Scott, Webb Simpson and Jordan Spieth, part of the board, along with Tiger Woods, named as Vice Chairman. So this is the
what
new...
on earth is Peter Malnati doing in there?
I don't know, to be honest. You don't know what his credentials are like. They all went through the American college system, didn't they? So you'd assume he's got some sort of
like
degree.
Spot the odd one out there, isn't it? Like, yeah, you're like, what?
Everyone else is like top 15 in the world, and then there's Peter, yeah. Maybe it's because of his hats.
Maybe he's for 200 and below him. You know what I mean? 200 and below, have a word. any more news on that?
Yeah, so it's just the board's focus is going to be on fan engagement and growth, as well as developing new media sponsorship and commercial opportunities. So the PGA Tour Enterprise is pushing forward, obviously, with the back end now.
Well,
from
it got
SSG.
Changed to a profit, didn't it?
It's a profit this time, yeah. So that's obviously they've got some investments through, as we spoke about the last couple of weeks, both from a sort of famous person's perspective, influencers like Drake and LeBron.
Yeah.
And then we've also now got SSG and now the board's being named. So the reshaping changes are coming on the PGA Tour. It's just, where does Liv fit in that at all, if there is potentially talks about this partnership and this deal going on between
them? Well, they're just trying to, like I said last week, delaying the inevitable, trying to put themselves in a position where the sort of like Liv, the money that Liv are going to add, not going to make them any stronger. That's sort of where they're trying to go with it, aren't they?
Yeah.
But what Liv have done to make themselves not be very strong as well, or maybe it's a show of strength, is they've withdrew from the world ranking bid.
I know it's a strange one, that, isn't it? But, you know, I think looking back at it, they put the first bid in June 2022 and it was rejected October last year. So they just haven't moved forward with the second application and withdrew, haven't they?
I see that, yeah. I think there's a little quote from John Rahm and he said that it's not a good system. He said it's now clear the best way forward for Liv as a league and Liv golfers is not through the current world ranking system. That's what Greg Norman come out and said. And it just seems that, like, what are they going to do? Make their own? I remember we did say, didn't we, a couple of, like, last year at some point, they should just make the official world golfing table and then from the start of Liv, change the whole system to a new one and see where everyone would stack up on, like, exactly what you said, on a round-by-round basis.
It's how the world golf handicap system works, isn't it? You know,
exactly.
You base it on how difficult the course is, strength of field, and you go from there.
I don't think strength of field should play a factor.
Do you mean if you go out and just shoot
it's
a
just
low
you
score
against you get... the course? Like, it doesn't matter who plays.
Yeah, but then you've also got to consider, you know, the high stakes. Like, are you a best golfer in the world just because of how you play for 18 holes, or does the money that you're playing for, the championship that you're playing for, have a factor in that? Because if you're coming down the stretch of a major and you shoot a 68 in the final round of a major to win a major by one, compared to playing an event on the Asian Tour where you shoot a 62 to win a tournament by 10, you know, should you get more ranking points on that Asian Tour event because it's a difficult course, you've just shot 62? Does that make you a better player? I think there's got to be an element of what you're playing for, who you're playing against, who you're beating in order for it.
Yeah, but if you're going to go strength of field then like that, and you're saying exactly what you're saying there, should you get more points for beating Scottie Scheffler down the stretch than you should get for beating Peter Malnati down the stretch? Should that count to more because you were in the final group with a better player round?
Well,
it goes too far then.
Well, that's why it's so difficult to try and change it and get a new system. The old system worked to a certain extent. Well, actually, when it changed, it didn't really work because then it was unfair on like the likes of DP World Tour. We spoke about it when Ewan won in Qatar, didn't we? And he got 8 points.
6.8 points.
Yeah, compared to, I think Scottie Scheffler won the Waste Management at the same time and got like 65 points.
Exactly.
It's like 11 times the amount that he'd won, and they're still going out and winning on a major tour. So it definitely needed to change. Now it's just gone completely full circle where, because so many of the top players in the world have gone over to Liv and they've excluded themselves out of that system now because they're not eligible for world ranking points. Now you've got to question whether it's fit for purpose and whether the golf, but it's about the golf world coming back together to do that. And, you know, where do you start? Who makes the decisions?
I think you've already done it. I honestly do think that's the, I know you're saying about you want to put the strength of field in it and all that, but you can't, like, the strength of field's out the question because Liv's a closed shop and the elevated events are closed shop. So it's this, like your field is only determined by, like we said that last year, like we can tell you who's going to be playing in the elevated events next year because they'll be the ones who played this year.
Yeah.
Because there's no real the way in, is there? Unless you get yourself in the through like the few startup events and all that, and you get yourself into the world top, whatever.
And you know what? Like this, if that's the way golf's going to go, and it looks like it is going to go that way, where you know the PGA Tour are going to have more events where it's less players, shortened field events. Liv have already decided their model, unless they make drastic changes to it, where you, like you say, the players who start the season end the season unless they get injured, and the teams are the team. So if that's the way that golf's going to go, then the thing that's going to, we mentioned this last week, but the place in golf that's going to suffer the most is the major championships, because eventually, you know, when these exemptions run out or when players go so far down the rankings, they're not going to be able to play in the major championships. So you're never going to get the best players in the world playing the major championships because of this. Like even the RNA have come out and said that there's no concession to Live Golf for the Open. So they made a change this past week where past champions, as of from this year, are only exempt to play until they're 55 years old, but it used to be 60 years old. So they've changed that by 5 years. Obviously, past champions still get it till they're 60, but anybody new moving forward is only exempt till they're 55. But that was an opportunity for the RNA to come out while they're breaking that news to mention maybe something about Liv if there was ambitions to do that. But there's, well, there's nothing in there.
As you say, one thing that happens that's bad, it does make, like that final qualifying with Sergio and Graham McDowell and all that, like it's just down at West Langs, it's great, isn't it?
It's fantastic for us, yeah.
It's for us getting to see them up close and personal.
That's it, but then Sergio doesn't qualify.
He wasn't too happy, was he? With a few, I think it was all the appeared on badges in his face.
Everyone standing behind him while he's in the middle of the fairway. Yeah, I mean, it was great to get that close to such world-class players, wasn't it? But ultimately, him having to go through that route has led to him not qualifying.
Exactly.
For the event. So,
and if anyone can have a good rounds and go out there and be playing in the Open, which is great.
That's what's so special about it, isn't it? You do get the success stories. Look at Dan Croft.
Exactly.
2021, you know, qualified at West Lancs and played in the Open at Royal St. George's. So no, unbelievable experience for Dan.
It's amazing, isn't it?
You do get them stories. And like you mentioned before, Alex Fitzpatrick, based on the scene the last couple of years, playing really good golf and then get to the major and finishes, what, top 10? Wherever it was he finished, I can't remember.
Doesn't look like he's looking back anytime soon either, does it?
Definitely not, no.
But it's like, just them pulling out of that, like they can't just leave it at that. Like, look at Neiman's form there, another, what, top five this week at Liv.
Hole in one.
And getting a hole in one, and it's, he just isn't outside the top five at the minute, but he's at, what is he, top 100 and odd?
Well, there's only three golfers now in the top 50 in the world. John Rahm still number 3, Hatton's still number 17, Kepka's moved down to 31 from 30, and Cam Smith, for the first time in a long time, is now outside the top 50 in the world. He's 54. Last week he was in the top 50. So there's only three current players in the top 50 in the world right now on Liv, which tells you everything you need to know about the world rankings, because there's a lot more players worthy of that top 50 spot, Neiman being a prime example.
1,000,000% Neiman, and like Cam Smith, like, nearly getting the job done in Hong Kong. He wins that and he probably falls further off.
It wouldn't have mattered, yeah, because there's no points available. So yeah, he went 54th regardless, yeah.
So it's stupid, yeah, is what it is.
It is, but, you know, unfortunately, the OWGR have set a criteria, and then when they've gone back to challenge that criteria, they've just said no, so they've just withdrew. Like, I don't know what the end game is for Liv. If they're withdrawing, I don't know what they've got up the sleeve. Do they create a tournament themselves where they invite players from the PGA Tour and other places? Do they make a fifth major? I don't know. Is that possible?
Maybe.
But then, you know.
Or are they pulling out because they know that this framework's close and then they're going to get it anyway?
It could be anything. Like, it could literally be anything.
There's something behind it, isn't it? It's not just a done. They seem very purposeful, don't they? Like,
well, I think because there's no. Yeah, I think because there's no fallout off the back of it. So, you know, the PGA Tour make a certain decision and do certain things. Certain players will have opinions. Like, I've not heard anything coming from LIV golfers that has criticised that decision.
John Rahm come out and said it's a load of nonsense anyway. Like, Norman's come out and said it's finished.
So they're united in the sense that...
I think they're saying, like, we don't want it.
Yeah.
It's not doing anything for anybody.
Yeah.
So why would we want to bid for something that we don't believe in? I think that's the road that they're going down.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe.
But, so just getting into a little weekly winners roundup that we like to do. So, obviously... Well, number one, Scotty Scheffler got the job done by 5 in Bay Hill.
Unbelievable.
We'll get into his putting in a minute. Matteo Manassero, back in the winner's circle after nearly 11 years, wins the Johnson's Workwear Open.
It just shows that he got that win on the Challenge Tour last year and got his cards. And, like, winning, you know, Challenge Tour is not as big as the DP World Tour, but winning at that level, just getting back in that winner's circle. I know it's been 11 years since he's won on the... It's 11 years, was it? Since he's
nearly 11
since he's won the DP World Tour. But I think just that, even getting that win last year and, you know, sort of just getting it over the line must just do so much for these players who haven't won for so long.
Million percent. And then we've had Abe Ansett as well, winning a 3-way playoff with Paul Casey and Cam Smith over in Hong Kong with a birdie. Ansett shot 7-under, 8-under, and then shot 2-over final round.
Yeah, he had quite a demanding lead, didn't he?
Five-shot lead, but shot 72, but then come out a deserved winner. That's his first win since last year's International Series, 2020 International Series that he won.
It was, and he weren't the only player who played well that week as well.
Well, I'm just going to get into that now for you, actually.
Talk to me about him.
I'll owe you a little bit of an apology, really.
Go on.
So, obviously, Anthony Kim, he shot under par.
Not just under par, though, 5-under par.
5-under par.
You're not doing it justice there. I mean, he's come out and he's shot over par, so that's what, 5 rounds
he
in a row.
6-over, 2-over, any?
Yeah.
So, and then he shot 5-under to finish 50th.
No new clubs, which we spoke about last week, didn't we? We weren't sure whether he'd had new equipment.
So he hasn't remember.
Yeah. He hasn't been fitted for clubs. Doesn't use a TrackMan. You know, so this is just raw talent, this. He's been given a set of clubs. He's gone out. And all right, first 5 rounds have all been over par. But to go out and shoot 5-under in tournament conditions.
It was raining as well, wasn't it?
So
it was a bit moody, the conditions.
There you go. So I think...
But look...
It's an indication of his talent.
He's on the way up.
What I was trying to reiterate last week.
And if he keeps going with it, then I will keep apologising.
Well, the question was, you don't need to apologise.
Who's he beat?
Well, yeah, I know that the question was, I'm not saying that he's going to go out next time and win the whole tournament, but what I'm saying is, the question was, do you think Anthony Kim will compete on LIV this year?
You said no, you were
saying he's going to finish last every tournament.
He's had one fluke round. and he's got himself prized himself off the bottom of the leaderboard.
Listen, you know, it's all
from
it takes.
Scott Vincent.
It's all it takes. That one round to show you that you've still got it.
It only takes one shot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. to get you
playing
back.
Well, aren't you? Remember?
Yeah, playing well, mate. Playing well at the minute.
Yeah, that's another thing we haven't spoken about our golf, have we? Like, we've been out there winning things.
You know what? We did win things.
We did win.
Yeah, on Thursday. Yeah, we went out and took a couple of the lads on round Formby. We all haven't played Formby all for a while.
No, it was the greens have been done and sanded, obviously, the time of year. And I've seen SNA is getting done on the Instagram as well.
I think that's just the way
The weather's been a bit too pony on it to get them.
We've had one of the worst winters ever, haven't we? But I think we done all right, didn't we? Yeah, it was a good match, to be fair. Just played a scratch match against a couple of the lads that we know. Phil, who's doing the content day for us. And it was good.
It was, and it like that, even like when you're like you've been playing, and then like we're just back to like giving each other shit on the course, and nice of you to turn up, even though
the ninth was a defining moment, wasn't it? So we were on 9, we'd just gone one up, thanks to me, on 8, and on 9, I'd made a par, I was in for par.
Pretty sure Joey made a 4 on 8, but anyway.
Did he?
Yeah, he got up and down at the bunker, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. So we had halved eight. So you won seven, didn't you? That's what it was. Yeah. So I halved eight for us then. And then we're on nine. We're one up. And it's about 3.5 foot, would you say?
Nah, 4.5. 5 foot, 6 foot, 10 foot.
And I was going to give me. Kev looked at me and you knew I was going
to
give
him. I could see you wrote to say,
and
pick
I seen
it up,
your eyes. And
I just
you
looked
just,
out and just shook me.
Shook
head.
Me head. Don't you dare
Don't
give him
you
that.
Dare, mate.
And then he missed it. And we went 2 up. And I was like, fuck, see. Here we go again. But yeah, no, we won on 18, didn't we? Yeah, went down 18 all square.
We did. It was good. What was funny was when we were, before we teed off, like the lad Phil Gaddu we were playing with was like, do you know what? I can't wait to be coming down 18 all square. And we'd be at our second shot. We all have to go for it and all that. Like he proper talked and then he had like a 3.5 footer on the 17th and like he was lining it up and obviously waiting to get given it. We just left it, didn't we, for ages. Anyway. Pick it up, Phil. Come on, let's get down 18.
Give him what he wants and then tops it off the 18th tee.
Oh my God, the 30 yards. That was unbelievable. I forgot about that. But yeah, no, our golf was good. And then obviously,
just to get back out there. Oh, the nice. Weather was all right for it as well, weren't it? So
yeah, we had to get out there, didn't we? It was unbelievable.
It was good.
So you think AK's, do you think this is going to be the resurgence then, do you? Do you think he's back?
Well, I just think this round of golf just gives him that belief. I don't know what his belief systems were like beforehand, but you know.
He's saying he's here to whoop everyone and all that.
So, you know, he's not shy of confidence, is he? I think if he shoot 5 rounds over par, if he shot and he was coming joint last, I think, or maybe he was one off coming last going into the final round. If he has a poor round and finishes bottom twice, then maybe he does start to question himself. But to come out final round in toughish conditions, shoot 5 under the way he did. Did he go bogey free?
No, I haven't checked the scorecard.
I think he did go bogey. Maybe he didn't go bogey free. I didn't watch it all. But yeah, I think doing that and not coming last and having a competitive round of golf, I think it was the tied low round of the day. So it basically, if it was a one-day tournament, he'd win it.
No, we had 2 bogeys.
Well, there you go. So what's he done there? 7 birdies.
7 birdies, yeah.
7 finished. Birdies and 18-0 shows you that, you know. Well,
bogey 3 back 9, like 6-5 under.
Yeah.
So he's had a good 9 holes. Like, that's just, that hasn't helped that at all.
Yeah,
he's had a good 9 holes there, back 9.
Yeah, so, you know, I just think, do I think he'll win on live? I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't say there's no chance, if I'm honest. I think he'll definitely compete, though. I think there'll be one tournament before this season's up where Anthony Kim will go into the final round with a chance to win.
Interesting. What you call that? Premonition?
Prediction?
Big chat. Big chat, mate. So the DP World Tour, as we just spoke about then, was Matthew Manassero back in nearly over a decade outside the winner's circle.
Yep.
He's the first graduate from the Challenge Tour of 2023 to win on the race to Dubai. He gets the 13th in the rankings with that win.
Yeah, big move. Yeah.
Big moves. And
up
then
73 spots, wasn't
he? Yeah, and then he's up from 85th, whatever that maths is. And he's 182nd on the Fugazi system up from 381. First time he's back in the world's top 200 world. First time he's back inside the world's top 200 since March 2015.
Yeah, I remember watching at a Formby Matteo Manassero play Tommy Fleetwood in the final.
He shot course record at West Lancs, didn't he?
Yeah, the British Amateur Championships. Yeah,
2008.
Is that when that was?
I think so.
Yeah, I remember watching them both walking around and watching them both playing like. Neither of them missed a shot. It was such a good game. But I honestly thought that he would go on to do real major things. And then for whatever reason, he's had that dip in form.
Well, he won 4 times before he was 20, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he got onto the scene,
didn't he?
Well, he got off to a faster start than Tommy. You know what I mean? So his rise to stardom was quicker than Tommy's.
It can be because he's from Italy and it's not a massive, massive golfing nation, not that many Italians, is the knocking round. Obviously, you got the Molinari, you got Migliosi now. Like,
Pavon, French.
Definitely French. it's probably when you come back to you're a hometown hero for a bit, aren't you? You're the next biggest thing in the world. And the pressure can sometimes, like what going on with Joel Damon now, like it can get to you.
Yeah, could be that. Could be an injury. Could be a swing change. We all know the story of Martin Kaymer. You know, world number one, playing unbelievable golf, decided to change his swing, never recovered, really.
No.
So the golf's an amazing sport in a sense that, you know, there's just so much that can happen overnight. Anthony Kim, again, going back to him, prime example, overnight. You know, you think he's going to come last again, shoot 5 under. Where does that come from? There's something in there. You know, Matteo Manassero, first 2 rounds, playing all right, shoots 11 under round 3.
Yeah.
It's like in contention. There you go, 1 round of golf, gets it over the line.
And then obviously there was a weather delay, wasn't there? Like, so he's got, he's, and there was like,
he had 2 to play or something.
Norris and, what's his name? Higando or Cigar, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
They were like making birdies and Thurston Lawrence, what do I call him?
Thurston Lawrence,
Thurston, I put, didn't I?
Yeah.
They were all coming, they were all getting to 20 odds under. It was like, it was anyone sort of thing. And then he had to go in to the clubhouse, like thinking about the lead, and he hadn't won 10 years. Like, what's going through your head?
Well, this is it, yeah. This is it. So, you know, sometimes is that, I'll ask that question to you, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Obviously, it's worked out for him this time, but does that give you time to, I don't know if he's into his mental health techniques or his mental game techniques. Does he do some exercises while he's got that time to you know, bring himself back down to reality? And has that helped him?
Probably a couple of shots of whiskey in the clubhouse, isn't it? Calm the nerves and get back out
calm
there.
Calm it right down, yeah.
Yeah, so like it was good to see him back though. Like
he's a
fan favourite, isn't he? And like everyone's been rooting for him since he was 6. He's been on the scene forever. And
well, that's it. You know, you want to see these people who, how old is he now? 20, must be late 20s now, mustn't he?
Yeah, well, he'd be the same age as Tommy. He'd be nearly 30, wouldn't he? The same age as Tommy,
that's,
I think.
That's it. So I think players like that who've been off the boil for so long, it's great. Because remember when he was playing Challenge Tour the last couple of seasons and seeing him contend and do well, straight away all over social media, there was this big buzz about him. And yeah, just it's great to see him back.
19th of April, 1993, he was born.
31. Next month.
So, yeah, so he'd be, so he's 31 next month, yeah. any more to add on the DP World Tour?
Nothing.
No, then, so, Bale.
Yeah.
Like,
it's scary, isn't it? It's scary to think that if he's rolling that rock, mate, do you catch him? Does anybody catch him?
Well, he's ranked first in every statistic outside of putting, like some weeks, and he's finishing 5th, 6th.
We've said this
he's
time and time again.
He's missing 4 footers, 3 footers. Yeah. This in the final round, like on, he was on 15 or 16. He's rolling in his longest putt of the week, like from downtown, like to get to 14 under, and you're just like Scottie Scheffler wasn't doing things like that.
Well, the thing is, Scottie Scheffler, he can get them over the line, gets to world number one, and gets some wins. But that's like a year since his last win. But his golf has been phenomenal in that last year.
Oh, I know.
Tee to green, he's been superb, and he just could not knock the putts in.
And then he's obviously joined podcast guest Phil Kenyon's team, hasn't he?
He certainly has.
And then Rory, give him a couple of tips saying to go to a mallet putter, and then he's put half an inch on his putter, or an inch, and then he's took his line off his ball. So like two little tips, then going to see Phil, who's obviously done a bit of work at Rory in the past, as he told us on his podcast episode. Has Rory done golfing? It's what I want to ask.
Well, it will be seen in the coming weeks, won't it? Because
there's not like Scheffler caught, like in everyone's mind, if you were there the way Sky are speaking, like Scheffler's this week's in the bag, and like the Masters is in the bag.
Two tournaments that he's won. Masters won comfortably when he was playing well.
After winning, did he go these 3 in a row? Didn't he? Or no?
No, he went. He went Waste Management Masters, didn't he?
Did he?
Had a bit of a gap between the. He won like 3 dead quick on that, and it was a major, wasn't it? Maybe it was this one.
He won this last year, didn't he?
He won the Players last year.
He won Bale last year.
No, Kurt Kitayama won it last year.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
Yeah, Scheffler won it the year before.
Ah, right, okay.
So he won the Waste Management Phoenix Open and then won the Masters.
Yeah.
He won like 3 tournaments in the space of God, 6 weeks or something and went to world number one.
But he's actually, he gets these mad runs of form where he's, you think, how's anyone beating him? But it's only the putter that was sort of letting him down, wasn't it? There's was interesting comments by Brad Faxon saying that they always talk about players taking one side of the golf course out when Scotty's took both out.
Just by smoking it down the middle?
Just straight down the pipe.
Yeah, so he won Arnold Palmer Invitational. He won the Volkswagen Waste Management Championship.
He won a Volkswagen Open. In a raffle.
So he won Phoenix Open, he won Bay Hill, and then he won the Masters. Yeah, those they were the three
In 22.
They were the three tournaments that he won that propelled him to world number one.
Right. So when did he win the Arnold Palmer?
2022. And last year he won the Players.
Right, I see, he won the Players last year.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it's interesting, like, would you back him? Are you backing him this week?
Would I back him? I think you've got to, haven't you? It's, you know, Scotty Scheffler is defending champ. He's just destroyed a very, very strong field last week. The same top players in the world that played last week are going to be playing this week again. You know, what's stopping him the way he's playing? As long as it all goes down to the putter. You know what I mean? Was it a fluke week? It's like anything, you put something new in the bag and you change something new. It normally works for
the souls.
Yeah. So it's, how long does this actually work for? Is it a proven change, which is going to be something that gives them Tiger Woods numbers for the whole year? Or is it going to be something that, you know, once he gets more comfortable, he goes back to old routines and starts missing again?
Yeah, it's...
Because
I haven't always been a bad putter. So,
but it's the mental side of things, isn't it?
Yeah.
But in him making that comment and that statement, I haven't always been a bad putter, reiterates the fact that he knows over the last couple of years he's been a bad putter.
I mean, so if he doesn't know that, he's asylum.
But what it is, though, what I'm trying to say is that's in the back of your mind always.
Yeah, I suppose.
He misses a couple of putts. Does he let it get to him straight away, or does he think, no, stick to the program?
I think he's just turned the corner, me.
I do. I do agree with that, but this is what, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, there's still a potential for him to throw tournaments away off missing putts.
Interesting.
Because although he's won this tournament at Bay Hill last week, he was put under no pressure whatsoever.
No.
He had the tournament won going onto the back nine. Well, he had a four-shot lead going onto the back nine. The way he's playing at tee to green, there's no pressure on him to make birdies and hole putts because it's not a birdie.
But even when Koepka was putting, it was a Koepka putting pressure on him. Who was putting pressure on him when he won the Masters? Was it DJ? And then he chipped in, didn't he, on the third? It was DJ, wasn't it?
Cam Smith, wasn't it?
Was it Cam Smith, was it? And he chipped in on the third.
He chipped in on the third.
Out of nowhere. And then he went in the hole. Because they were both down on the left, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So he can hold. He's got pressure in him, like he's got
tournaments over the line when he's being chased, and he's chased people and overtook them and won tournaments. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we're talking about a brand new Scotty Scheffler now, who is now being like tipped to go on and win every week forever because of how well he hits the ball and this putting things all of a sudden sorted. But what I'm saying is at Bay Hill, he was under no pressure to go and make a birdie on that hole, to hit the dangerous shot, to take a risk. He was playing he had it on a string. He's hitting a tee to green. As long as he's hitting a tee to green, he probably could have three putted a couple of them holes coming in.
But he's 16 from 16 inside 15 foot.
But like, if there's pressure on him, does he knock 16 of that? Does he knock them all in? That's my point. That's what I'm getting at.
You probably need to be in the room with him and Phil and be like, see what they're working on, like, and see how he's changed his whole like routine, his setup, his green reading. He might be using the putt view. You just don't know what he's been doing, do you?
The conclusion for me is I'm excited because for years we've wanted someone to just dominate golf, haven't we?
We have.
We've just wanted someone to just turn up week in, week out, and your target is you beat him, you win the tournament.
Yeah.
Golf was so much more fun when Tiger used to turn up every week and everyone was 100%. Like, beat Tiger. And if Tiger won, you knew you were watching unbelievable golf.
I know.
So I'm excited to see how the players turns out this week. And you know what? If Scheffler goes on and wins by five, six shots, we're in for an unbelievable Masters.
Yeah. The Masters is gearing up to be like a heavy, heavy tournament, isn't it? Like, I can't believe it's only a couple of weeks away.
Well, this is it, yeah. I mean, you've got... It's the excitement of LIV. It's the first major since John Rahm, Tyrrell Hatton left, and they're always two players who perform well at Augusta, aren't they?
Yeah.
Cam Smith, major champion in the past, never won the green jacket. Is this his year? When you're talking about the LIV, DJ's playing well, Brooks is playing well, Bryson's playing really well.
Yeah.
Crushers won again in the team event.
Neiman,
yeah. Playing unbelievably well. So then that's the LIV side of things. But then you've got Scotty Scheffler, who's taking everybody on the PGA Tour apart. So here's a scenario. Scotty Scheffler goes and wins the next, I don't know, three tournaments in a row by 5-6 shots, dominating the tour, then gets to the Masters and can't compete against the guys at LIV.
Interesting.
It's an interesting concept, yeah, isn't it?
Be good. I'd like that.
Would you?
Yeah, because it's like... It just gives them more credibility to be like, well, look what happened last year at the Masters, look what happened this year. Like, it's like you've got to be let us in the open there.
Open that door, please.
Open up, buddy.
Yeah, no, it's do you know what? It's getting up to be a great season. If we get all the, it looks like for this year at least, we're going to get the major championships. The best players in the world are still going to be playing them, minus a couple of players potentially. But it's just what happens with the future of golf moving forward with all the changes.
It's interesting that you talk about Tyrrell Hatton there, because I read an article then saying that he had to make a decision by 7:30, and at 7:29, he didn't know what to do and he flipped the coin and then went to LIV.
No, he never.
Uh-huh.
Who said that?
Tyrrell. On a podcast there, that Golf Magic.
That's unbelievable.
I know. It's mad, isn't it?
That is unbelievable, that. And what's he regret it? Or what?
The way the cookie crumbled, I think.
A coin toss, though?
Mm. Look.
I had a deadline at 7:30 on Sunday night. With the help of a coin toss, I signed the contract at 7:29. That is incredible, that.
Mad, isn't it?
That is incredible.
Like, so he's, like... That's how much he probably was torn over it, wasn't it? Like, he's probably speaking to Ram, wondering what to do, and then just flipped the coin and thought, right. But your boss, you sound either way, whatever it lands on, you're happy, aren't you? You're in all four majors this year, you go to LIV, you get 50 million, you're buzzing your head off, or you flip the coin, you're on the PGA Tour, and you're in all the elevated events, and you're winning millions.
Well, I think the major championships is definitely the deciding factor. If Tyrrell Hatton knows that he's playing all four majors, then he's probably going to LIV. Knowing that, well, by the time the majors come round next time, surely this has got to be
sorted, exactly. It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's so difficult to know what's going on in the game of golf at the moment, because there's just so much, like, every week there's some more news. LIV have pulled out of world ranking points. What does that mean? You know, the PGA Tour's new enterprise has announced Jay Monahan as the CEO and Tiger Woods as the vice chairman. Like, the weeks before, $1.5 billion. Up to $3 billion was being invested into the PGA Tour. It's like there's just no mention of how LIV and the PGA Tour come together to sort it out. So
that's mean, they're trying to make their own little castle, aren't they? Over on the sand, they're living like buckets and spade, ready to like what do we do with these? But it's interesting, Rory come out as well saying that he gave praise to Scotty about his ball striking, saying that it's on another level. He said that he knew that once he got the putter sorted, that this sort of stuff was going to happen. Reflecting on his 5-shot victory.
Well, that's it. And I think going into that final round, you know, we haven't spoken about Will Zalatoris. First time he's competed since he's come back from his injury. He's another guy who, you know, a questionable putter.
Yeah.
So what was he going to do? You know, Matsuyama, unbelievable golfer. You know, what was he going to do? Shane Lowry was competing, leading last week. What was he going to do? Rory coming off. What was he going to do? Like, just spitting out names of some of the best players in the world there, chasing Scotty Scheffler, and he just put them all to bed after 9 holes.
He did.
Wyndham Clark, another one, major champion last year, playing really well. That's another thing we need to speak about, the tantrums from them too.
Oh, Rory?
Rory smashing the tee box and Wyndham, like...
Even on that Netflix, he seems like he was angry, wasn't he, before he got the psychologist?
Yeah. I suppose that's probably what that golf course does to you, though, because, you know, with Tommy Fleetwood and Jake Knapp making 12s on one hole, it's not something that you see in professional golf, is it, on a day-to-day basis? So
look at John Daly making that 18 or whatever he made, and then
same hole, wasn't it?
Birdied the next. Was it the same hole? Was that hole? Was it?
I think it was that hole. Yeah.
And he's made it. Then he goes and makes a 2 on the next. He only had one golfie left or something. Like, it's just, it brings out these great stories. Obviously Bryson going for the green and all that. It's like,
yeah,
it is a perfectly designed hole.
It's a great course, isn't it?
But the so then talking about Wyndham and Rory, they've come out talking about the PGA Tour being like a bit of a, like, should be a closed shop.
Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? I think the question come to Wyndham Clark, didn't it? Obviously, the reporter who asked the question was talking about, you know, what do you think of Rory wanting to be a bit more strict on the tour and, you know, not letting as many members, and what would he, and then Wyndham Clark said something like he'd like it if there was 100 golfers and like 20 get relegated, and like anybody can get relegated. So you're looking at the top end and the bottom end, but that's basically what happens now. But it's just 1-2-5. There's no change.
Yeah. I think Mansell come out saying, like, you said, he's got no bad feelings against Wyndham Clark, but he was like, just remember where you came from, and like, would you have made this not so long ago when you were outside the world top 100? So
this is it. He's in a position of power now, because he is a major champion and he has proven himself as one of the better players in the world now. So
Netflix has gone to his head, I think.
Just don't. Yeah, exactly that. Don't forget where you came from. At the end of the day, there's hundreds of players across Asian Tour, across DP World Tour, who are just as good as Wyndham Clark. They just need that opportunity, and they just need that time on tour to get themselves to that standard.
No,
it doesn't happen overnight.
No, of course.
You know what I mean? It does for the likes of Rory McIlroy's and your Tiger Woods and players like that. But even Scottie Scheffler, his first 2 or 3 years on tour, he struggled.
No, yeah. He's 1,000,000%. Well, look, so the Clarks who come out of college, like, where, like, he's ranked, like, was he number one in college and all that, and then he's come out and he thought he was going to hit the ground running. He just didn't.
Well, that's it. If that closed shop that they're talking about there was a reality, Wyndham Clark would have never got his opportunities to go and play on tour.
Exactly.
Because how would he have got in?
Exactly. So what? It's like, what's going on now? Well, you can't just get to the place and then start saying, let's close the door.
So he doesn't have to leave.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. But it's been with Clark. Did you see the rules controversy?
I did, yeah, where he put his wedge behind the ball in the rough.
What do you think of it?
I mean, it's pretty clear. The ball moved, didn't it? The rules are the rules. You probably should have got a shot penalty, maybe. I don't know. Why is he doing that anyway?
Well, that's what Chambly said. He didn't exactly ground the club lightly. He said, why was he putting into the ground so forcefully? He was beyond me. I think he should have been penalised.
I agree, yeah. I just think, yeah, why is he doing that in the first place? You don't need to do that, do you? If you want to feel the grass around the ball, do it away from the ball. It's the whole point of it, isn't it?
Well, that's it. And then Clark said, I wasn't trying to do anything like cheating or anything like that to improve my lie. That even just sounds like someone who's tried to cheat on it.
Honestly, it wasn't me.
Don't believe a word of that.
He probably wasn't, though. He probably just done it. Yeah. It's probably a natural thing for him to do. Maybe he just puts his wedge behind the ball all the time.
We just don't see it.
We just don't see it, yeah.
But this week we will see it.
Go on.
So the PGA Tour has brought out like a VAR style Hawkeye, it's called. It's going to be two fellas sitting in a van all week and analyzing.
Sounds dodgy.
Sounds weird, doesn't it? So there's 129 cameras at the ready at TPC Sawgrass, 67 for NBC and 58 for PGA Tour Live, and 4 speciality cameras. Like, if a ball plugs in the fairway, rain pools up, that's necessary to squeeze, or any scenario calling for a ruling, chief referee Mark Dusseberg and tournament referee Orlando Pope will see it in real time. And then it goes on to say that the fellow wrote his articles in the thing, there's like 50 cameras or 50 screens all set up. They can zoom right in, replay, go back and look at everything, like what VAR do. What do you think of that?
I mean,
bit much.
VAR's all right when it's one incident, and you've got, I think there's like 3 people who look at one VAR and they're all talking. So the referee makes a decision live, and then VAR look at it live, and even that takes ages, and it's a pain in the ass. So if you're doing it Fucking
the thing is with the difference between golf and football is though golf can carry on and you can be penalised later. You can't just like add goals on in footy, can you?
Oh, so you're not talking about when somebody asks for a ruling? Are you just talking about them trying to catch people
they
out?
They do both, I think. I think they're doing everything, yeah. It's policing the whole thing. And
on the thing where somebody's looking for a ruling?
It'll speed it up because the referee doesn't have to come out in a buggy.
Yeah, but there's a difference between looking at it on a screen and actually getting down and having to maybe feel in the grass and to see whether it is plugged and things like that. Are they going to come?
They can zoom right in and all that. And then they can replay it how it went in and see what like they can.
Well, let's use Patrick Reed's incident.
He'd be handcuffed.
No, but last time when he put his fingers into the rough and said it was plugged, and there was all the controversy about whether he cheated.
Well, that's it. So they'll know straight away that he'd done that. Instead of like waiting until after.
No, you can't see inside the grass.
Yeah, but it took someone to like phone up and be like an armchair ref on it to phone up and be like, this has happened, and then it surfaces on social media where this will be happening in real time, and they just phone them and be like, two shots, buddy. It'd be interesting to see what will be the most interesting thing is how many penalties come from it.
Yeah.
Of people not even knowing what they've done and they're just getting a two shot, you've clubbed that branch there or that happened there. Like, there could be all hell could be let loose, couldn't it?
Yeah, I don't know what I think of it. I only go off VAR and I hate it.
Oh, yeah, only because Everton.
It's just not even that. It's just like, you know, when there's a goal and it's offside by a fingernail and it's like, but he's onside really. It's just his knuckles offside as he's running in a natural position. Like, that should be a goal.
No, I know, yeah, I know. Because you can't exactly use your hand to score, can you?
What are they going to... So using that Wyndham Clark example, because they got good camera footage of that, are they going to just like keep watching and keep watching to see if the ball moves and zoom right in? And if it moves, they're going to be like, right, penalty.
All TBC, that.
TBC. It'd be interesting. I don't know what I think about it, to be honest. I don't think I like it.
I reckon, put it this way, I think come next Monday, we will have talking points of this.
Definitely.
So we haven't really got into the birdie bogey bus, but should we get into it now?
Let's go. It's that time again, y'all. The birdie bogey bus, the birdie bogey
bus, birdie bogey bus. Obviously, the birdie.
I think we've basically talked over all the points, haven't we, really?
Just to summarise.
Got to be Phil Kenyon, hasn't it? We've agreed.
Kenyon, Sutton, Scotty's put it out. Where can he take it?
This is it.
The bogey is... Rory McIlroy, give him putting tips to Scheffler. I think he's fucked professional golf, personally. And then the bust has got to be Rory and Wyndham's closed shop chat, do you think?
Or do you think
Anthony Kim?
I know, I think, why would it be Anthony Kim? He's a baby, isn't he?
Just to wind it up.
No, I think... maybe not so much Rory's comments. I think probably Wyndham's comments is more of a bust. Maybe he hasn't meant it as it's come across, but it's come across as to say like he'd rather have less players playing on the PGA Tour. So why would you not want to compete against the best players in the world? If that's the, you know, all this cry about world ranking points and getting everybody to play on the same tournament of everybody is that we want to see the best players play against each other. So if then you move it to 100 players on the tour, then you're stopping these next players coming in.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, you're keeping the strength, but you're also keeping the up and coming strength out, aren't you, as well?
It's proof that, you know, this one thing the designated events have proven so far is how much the other tournaments suffer because of it.
Yeah, no, 1,000,000%.
Because all these top players have more time off now and they're having more rest because the schedule's not as busy because they only play in the designated events and a couple others. And you've got tournaments on there that like you just don't want to watch.
No, yeah, 1,000,000%.
So on that point then, let's wrap it up and see you all soon.
Ciao. Oh, boy, is he on the sink.